Blog Talk Radio.
Hi, today is June 17th. I'm Gwen Berry. I'm in South Florida. And with me today is Jack Jodell from Saturday Evening Post. Saturday Afternoon Post. Boy, I wrote that wrong, Jack. Sorry about that.
Yeah, we don't want to say that.
And we're speaking truth to power about the crisis of humanity on planet Earth, and here be monsters. This is our Sunday show. Help us out, repost it. And today's guest is Julia Trigg Crawford. Now, this is a lady steward of land in Texas. She is working to hold on to the family ranch. You're in Lamar County, right, Julia?
Absolutely, right on the banks of the Red River.
Oh, wow. That's poetic. The way I see it, of course, you know, I'm kind of a drama queen because I try to scribble a lot. And I would say that you're the victim of a corporate land grab through a process called eminent domain. You're in a tussle with TransCanada. And really, can you just tell us how this happened, what's happened? And I know you've had some change-ups here in the last few weeks. I'm looking forward to hearing that, too.
Sure. Well, and thanks for the, Jack and Gwen, thank you for the forum to tell our story. Kind of the,
yes.
The romantic story is I'm looking out the window at a farm my grandfather bought in 1948, and we've been farming it since then, and there have been other pipelines come through the area, but when they asked to come across our farm, the last two that came through, Dad said, can you find another way around it? We'd prefer not to have you on it. So the other pipelines did find a route, but about 3-4 years ago, TransCanada, a Canadian-owned company wanting to transport tar sands, came to Dad and asked if they could come across our place, and Dad posed the same, you know, request, can you find another way? And they said no. So we have been dealing with trying to protect our land and the artifacts on it and the water that runs through it, that waters our crops, and we're currently in a legal battle with TransCanada. We're standing up to protect our land, and they're claiming that what they're doing should allow them to take a part of it for their gain. So that's kind of where we're at.
Well, now, Julia, I read a piece. I've been going through some of the stuff that's been posted and published, and I read a piece about how Governor Perry had signed a bill in a few years ago that was supposed to ostensibly be in favor of property rights over this kind of eminent domain, but it actually had some fine print and loopholing in it that actually kind of reverses that for energy or oil companies. Did I get that correct?
Well, you know, I'm not a scholar of that particular legislation, Gwen, but I think you're right. There was kind of a high level an understanding or a perception that these were laws that would provide enhanced protections to landowners. But I do think there are some caveats in this legislation. It actually went into effect the day before, or actually just hours before, TransCanada submitted the paperwork to condemn our land. It went into effect September the 1st, and most of the condemnations in Texas by TransCanada were filed, or the ones that were still remaining were filed in the afternoon of August the 31st.
Julia, why don't you tell us what you just mentioned, that your land was condemned. That's
yeah,
a process
sure.
that I think many people don't understand. Why don't you explain what that all entails and how it comes about?
Well, in this particular case with TransCanada, TransCanada sought easements across the property of landowners, and it was, you know, basically an offering of a dollar amount. You know, this is what we would pay to gain an easement across your property. And typically it's pretty much a strip of land, you know, typically 50-foot wide easement. And because it was not something that we wanted, and because we did not sign these easements, kind of when the clock struck midnight and TransCanada said, there's no more, you know, you have to sign this document by midnight or it goes away, they then get a chance to come in and condemn your land by saying they have the power of eminent domain. And in Texas, the laws are kind of interesting that a landowner does not have any kind of forum in front of a judge during the condemnation proceedings. I can only assume it kind of happens behind closed doors because you're told, or at least we were told, we have the right to do this. We're probably going to do this. And the next thing you know, you're served with papers that say, we did it. Your land has been condemned by the judge. You're welcome to come to a hearing where three local citizens will decide how much you're going to get paid for your land. But there's really no forum for a landowner to go in front of a judge and say, judge, please don't condemn my land. And, so you only get a forum with the judge if you appeal that condemnation.
How do they get away with it? I mean, I don't understand how that can be, you know, under what auspices? Is it for the better part of the state or community? I would think that it would have to be an applicable local value of some kind that superseded your rights.
Well, in, you know, Texas is an oil state, and there's, you know, and not just oil, but there are, and our family is not saying there aren't instances where eminent domain isn't a good tool for the public. If a city needs water or if a community needs electricity, there are times where an entity that is doing something for the public good should be allowed to take land. And we, we're not saying there isn't. But this one, this is a foreign-owned, this is, a, you know, it's funny. A lot of people say Keystone, Keystone, Keystone. Well, let's say it what it really is.
TransCanada.
TransCanada, a foreign-owned company, there are enough kind of, there's enough gray area in the law, at least I believe, in the law in Texas, that they can go to the governing body in Texas for the permitting for pipelines is called the Texas Railroad Commission. And you can go to the Texas Railroad Commission, you're basically given, it's called a T4 form. And this is the form that if you're going to put in a pipeline or a, you know, if you're going to put in a pipeline. And you get to the choice to check two boxes. Are you a common carrier or are you a private carrier? And common carrier is kind of that, that area where you're afforded some rights because what you're doing is for, you know, the public good. Common carrier means that you have a pipeline that is available to other people that want to put their stuff through it. Your rates are non-discriminatory. You hold an open season so that anybody can put their stuff in it. So because any entity can go to the Railroad Commission, check a box that says you're a common carrier, that kind of opens up the door for them to claim eminent domain. And part of our position is there's way too much gray area because to be a common carrier, you have to prove that you are doing something for the public good. What you're transporting is one of the products that the state says you can transport as a common carrier pipeline. And that's part of what we're pushing back on. There actually was another landowner last year whose case made it to the Texas Supreme Court. And the Texas Supreme Court said, you know, when challenged by a landowner, the burden of proof falls on the pipeline to prove they are what they say they are.
That's
and that is kind of the shining light right now. It's called the Denbury Green case. So that is certainly part of what we're using for our pushback.
Yeah. Well, that's encouraging, actually. That sheds kind of a new light on the whole topic, at least in my mind. And I hope that that provides you enough window of opportunity to exploit that and keep these guys off your property.
Well, we'll see. It at least provides a forum for some discussion, and perhaps what we're showcasing is there's a disconnect in, you know, how someone is kind of given the right to do this.
Right.
It's interesting that a landowner has to go to court to make a company prove they are what they say they are. Part of our position is there should be an entity that polices this. Just because you check a box on a form doesn't give you the power. Somebody, if I went down the road and opened up a, say I was a marriage counselor and hung up my shingle and said, Julia Trigg Crawford, marriage counselor, someone from the state would be there and say, we would like to see your license.
We would like to
see what authorizes you to do this. Well, there's apparently no police, you know, in the state to do that in this regard.
Well, that's a very good point, and that's something that the public should be made very aware of. Julia, why don't you tell us a little bit? They want to run a pipeline across your territory, but more specifically, the way I understand it, they want to run it under your water supply.
Right. We have, you know, we irrigate. We got 400 acres of cropland. I'm looking out the window now. The corn is beautiful. The corn is as high as an elephant's eye, as the song goes.
Okay.
We just harvested the wheat, and we replanted the soybeans. But to put water on our crops, we have two irrigation systems, and we have rights, water rights, given by the state of Texas to pull water out of the creek. It's called Bodart Creek. And to come onto our property, TransCanada has to traverse that creek, and the way they plan to do it, if they're given a chance to, is to horizontally drill under that creek. So certainly that gives us cause for concern because historically the product they're transporting, tar sands, which is otherwise called diluted bitumen, it is a product that when there is some kind of catastrophic event and it leaks, when it hits water, unlike crude oil, diluted bitumen sinks to the bottom. All you got to do is look at the Enbridge spill 2 years ago at the Kalamazoo River. Same product, same catastrophic kind of event, and they're still cleaning that up at $700 million. Maybe it's just an astronomical price on cleanup that's not done after 2 years. So, yeah, we have protections of our water is a big deal.
Well, it would all but destroy your crops.
What it would do is it would prevent us from having access to the water. And after going through last year's drought in Texas, no water means no crops.
Exactly right, yeah.
Tar sands has been labeled by most of the environmentalists in North America as going, this deal especially out of TransCanada, as a threat to water tables all through the United States and part of Canada.
Mm-hmm.
It's outrageous.
Yes.
As you know, in eco, you know, Mother Earth is my gig. That's what I'm about, is the environmental sector, and it's outrageous that this is going on, especially when the leadership in this country right now is going back and forth on whether or not it's even a done deal. It seems really incredulous that this would be happening to Ms. Crawford and her family and other families, I'm sure. Julia, you told me that you had you were going to be making some changes with how you were defending and approaching this legally. Can you elaborate on that?
Well, I can't, Gwen. They're relatively new changes, but we are we're taking a fresh perspective on what we're going to be doing in the courts. We have the pretrial hearing has been moved. We have a couple more weeks to prepare. The pretrial hearing will be July the 18th, and the jury trial will be July the 30th. My understanding of it, and I'm not an attorney, but man, am I getting up to speed on how the legal process works. It is not like the Perry Mason movies I remember.
No.
It's a very different process. But my understanding is there's really two pieces to our legal battle right now. One is a hearing in front of a judge to challenge kind of the legal right for TransCan to even do this. And, depending on how successful we are at that forum, if we do not prevail on any of our positions and TransCanada is allowed to take the land, then the jury trial is really just a group of individuals determining how much we should be paid for that land. So we've got, two different pieces. But, we haven't even talked about one of the other reasons we're standing so firm as a family to protect this is the archaeological. We've talked about the water. We've talked about the land. But our land is also home to the Caddo Indian artifacts. And these are documented finds. Both TransCanada's archaeologists found them, and our archaeologists have found them. So part of our position is, these need to be preserved, and so the Caddo Nation is certainly looking over our shoulder and watching this because, you can talk about financial, damages, and you can talk about water damages, but when someone talks about destroying their ancestors' remains, that's a pretty powerful story too.
Very true. That's very good.
protected in this country. The sacred sites of burial mounds and such. If you have any of that on your land, then that is supposed to trump just about anything else.
Well, I'm learning there's distinctions on significance of artifacts. So that's that's an area as well on the significance of the artifacts.
Good to know all that stuff, because the lawyers on at least one side certainly will delve into that. There's no doubt about that.
Well, both sides are getting up to speed on something called the Texas Antiquities Act and the National Historic Preservation Act, Section 106. I mean, we're just walking, historians now of how protections are afforded to things that are sacred.
Yeah, well, great. That's another weapon you can use, hopefully, and hopefully it'll pay some dividends to you.
So, Julia, are you going to be going forward with this? Is your whole family is involved with this because it's family land, correct?
Absolutely. This the farm, and we actually call it Red Ark Farm, REDARC, apostrophe ARC. It is owned by one side of the partnership is my father, my sister, my brother, and I, and then the other half of the farm is owned by my uncle. We run it as one large farm, one farm. It was the farm my grandfather bought, and I am the farm manager of the whole farm. So I represent the interests and the wants of family members, and we all stand strong that this is, you know, this is something worth preserving, and we're standing up for, you know, not just environmental rights or archaeological rights. We're standing up for property rights, and that's been very galvanizing. You don't have to be a Republican or a Democrat or a Tea Party or anything.
Anything.
Property rights, especially us Texans. Us Texans are very proud of our land. So there's been a lot of support from every corner of the political spectrum, because property rights are a very strong belief here in the Lone Star State.
Sure, as they should be everywhere.
Let me ask you, Julia, can you describe to us what the farm does? How it's a working farm, I imagine. What do you do? What do you produce?
Sure, I'd be glad to tell you. I'm looking out the window now. The farm is around 700 acres. It's interesting, when you're right on the banks of the Red River, you lose acreage every year when the water changes. But about 400 of those 700 acres is actually in production land. When my grandfather bought it, it was a whole different combination of products. He grew cotton and soybean. Peanuts, alfalfa, maize. It is now in what they call the big three: corn, soybeans, and wheat. So the rest of the farm is the homestead where I live, and there's a big barn with the living quarters, and we've got some cattle. My father is a retired veterinarian, so of course we've got to have all kinds of critters. We've got cows and horses and dogs and cats. My sister's got goats to add to the mix. We have stock tanks. We've got duck ponds. We've got orchards. It's just, you know, it is a working farm. It is a working farm.
And you produce how much corn do you year? How much wheat? How much do you produce?
Well, you know, it changes every year because it depends on what acreage we plant. We're getting pretty good. We rotate. That's the right thing to do for the soil, but also you look at kind of what expected yields are going to be. And if it looks like corn's going to be high, you plant corn. That's part of the risk that you take. Yeah.
Sure.
And so I'm wondering how many of the family besides yourself work right on the farm.
Well, my brother lives in California, so he's watching from afar. So he doesn't work on the farm. My father, after turning over the reins to me as the farm manager, he lives in town. But you know, my father at 78 is one of the most amazing men I know. It was great to spend Father's Day with him today. He comes out probably 5-6 days a week, and we may be on the tractor, we may be building fence, we may be checking the cows, we may be looking at the hog damage. So he's very involved. And my sister lives, her place is adjacent to the farm, so she's involved as well. But even if we're not out there with with gloves on, we're all aware of what's going on, and especially with what's
Well, you're actively farming it, and it's not a hobby farm by any stretch of the imagination. This is something that you depend on for your livelihood.
We do. We actually lease. We're currently in a lease. The guy who's actually on the tractor planting the seed, we lease that to him. But on a daily basis, he and I talk, and we're strategizing, and I can go out and turn the pivots on and turn them off. I'm getting my fingernails pretty dirty every day.
Oh yeah, well that's actively farming, no doubt about it, in one capacity or another, no doubt about that. And so this is very vital to you. You can't have your water supply polluted by ridiculous out of country corporation coming in and bullying its way into your property. That's just unthinkable to most people. But, I mean, it is a very real reality. It happens. It's happened in our history and all across the country.
It has. And kind of the bottom line is unless somebody pushes back, these companies will take as much as they can until they're challenged. And,
That's right. Yeah, that's right. And,
we're just
eminent domain challenges have been successful in the past. It's just the common wisdom nowadays is that, it's eminent domain, so you're doomed. No, that's not necessarily the case. In many cases, people were victorious over the corporations or the interests that wanted to take advantage of their land or push their way through.
Well, it's been interesting to me because a great deal of the discussions that are occurring is that TransCanada is asserting that eminent domain is something they use very rarely, and that's good to know. But I know that in Lamar County alone, which is just a little county here in the northeast Texas, there were 11 other families in this county whose land was condemned. There were 12 families in this county alone. And as people I know that are kind of getting up to speed on eminent domain have checked, there were a lot of families up and down this whole proposed pipeline route in Texas who pushed back.
Have you been in contact? Oh, you're in contact with them, and they're all pushing back with you?
I haven't. It's I've had my hands full, Jack, just kind of fighting my fight. But we're finding that there may be strength in numbers, so I think there may be some communication.
Yes, that has occurred to me, definitely. There may be tremendous strength in numbers, and you guys might be able to band together and completely knock these guys off kilter.
Well, I think it's probably going to be the attorneys for all these families joining together.
Sure.
I'm learning that. A lot of it, the brain trust behind how you fight this is, it's not only your like the Crawford's emotional attachment, but it's the legal game. So
exactly right. That's 9/10 of it, if not more, right there.
Mm-hmm.
No doubt about it.
So Julia, can you be more specific on the process of condemnation of your land? And they take the whole ranch. When they go
they don't take the whole thing
right.
and I've had to get up to speed on all that. What they're taking and what they propose to take is a 50-foot wide permanent easement through through the pasture in question. And there's a permanent easement they would take, and that's a obviously a forever thing. Then during construction, there's some temporary easements they take so they can bring in their equipment and things like that. So, once that permanent easement is granted, whether it's given by the landowner, like some of my neighbors did, or whether it's taken, which is what TransCanada intends to do, there are limitations to what the landowner can do. I mean, can you continue to grow your crops on it? Well, yeah. Or, can you build a house over the top of the easement? Well, no, you can't do that, and you have to provide them access and things like that. So while, some people might say, well, it's going to be under the ground, you're not going to see it, you're not going to know it's there. Well, there are some above-ground things there, so they call slapstick markers, and there are some signs that apparently have to be available so when the airplanes fly over, TransCanada can see, where the pipeline route is. But part of it is that even if you can't see it, you know that you don't have control over your land. And everybody that works hard to secure land wants to say, this is ours, and we can do with it what we want. So,
plus, you face the very real threat. You face the very real threat that your water supply may become contaminated. And that is a very real threat because it's happened numerous times in the past.
That's right. And, not only the water in my creek that we use to irrigate, But we have very shallow water tables up here. I mean, the water I drink comes out of a well, and I think my pump is at about 28 feet below grade where my water comes from.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Well, that's another big concern, absolutely, without a doubt. Yeah, so this is no trivial matter. This is very serious stuff for all of you people that live in the area that is affected by this.
Absolutely.
Well, it extends from out of where is the beginning? I'm sorry, I forget. I lost the map here.
Well, what's interesting is the first, the Keystone XL pipeline, and it's actually, this is the second pipeline TransCanada has the United States. Originally, when it was going to be from Alberta to Houston, Texas, that was the pipeline that crossed the international border, and that's the one that needed a presidential permit. Mm-hmm. But when President Obama denied that presidential permit, mm-hmm. The only way, or the way that TransCanada proposed to still get the bottom leg, the Gulf Coast leg built, which is from Cushing, Oklahoma, to the Houston area, was they uncoupled that leg from the big pipeline. They kind of separated that off because you didn't need a presidential permit to build a pipeline from Oklahoma to Texas. Uh-huh. And that is the one that's moving forward now. President Obama uh-huh. had a conference, a press event, I don't know, a couple months ago up in Oklahoma saying he was going to help expedite all the permits that were still needed, just the state uh-huh. permits, uh-huh. to go from Cushing to Houston. And, uh-huh. The Crawfords, it's the same route and the same pipeline, whether it starts in Canada or it starts
right.
in Oklahoma. But
right,
still,
exactly.
still proposed to come across our place.
Mm-hmm.
There was a big oil spill recently. Mike Stimson's in the room, the chat room, and he's saying there was a big oil spill in Alberta recently. It polluted the Red Deer River. I don't know if that was TransCanada. I would imagine so, since they're the largest in the area and the Alberta mm-hmm. area. There have been, when this shale oil goes out into the water, the recovery is nil. And what I'm wondering is, basically, the group of families that have shown a reluctance to give them the rights to go through their land, is any of this going to make any difference in your legal battle, Julia, the ecological environment?
I don't know. Since we're the only ones in the county, everybody, and we're right on the Red River, anybody involved in the fight that's still in the fight, and my understanding is there are fewer than 10 families. I understand TransCanada said that, 99% of the leases have all been wrapped up. If you do the math, it looks like there's fewer than 10 that have not been wrapped up. So they're all south of me. And mm-hmm. I have not talked to – actually, I've talked to one woman, but there are others that are mm-hmm. – I think maybe it's not as loud as we are, but they're fighting. They're still fighting.
So basically – the environmental factor is not really what's going to come up in this legal battle. You're coming on a three-pronged platform of land rights, the archaeological, and then what could be what is the other?
Well, water is another one.
Water. What's ecological?
Mm-hmm. Okay. Just kind of your basic property rights. Yeah.
Sure. Mm-hmm.
And you have the support of the Native Americans as far as, or are you using the university archaeological department to help you, or both?
Well, we haven't gone the university route, but we certainly have a great dialogue with the Caddo Nation and the Tribal Historic Preservation Officer there.
Good.
So they're watching. They have sent a letter on our behalf, and it's public record, from the Caddo Nation to the ACHP, which is the Advisory Council for Historic Preservation.
Mm-hmm.
And so they've been great allies in this. And
do
you
know,
we're hoping that as – excuse me?
Do you have any political allies at this point? Any state or possible national representation?
Well, it's interesting. Texas is an oil state, and a lot of the support in Texas is pro-pipeline and pro-oil, and we're not saying we're against all that.
Right.
It has been the support from our elected officials, frankly, has not been what I'd hoped it would be, because a lot of them have allegiances to the energy industry. But they also have allegiances to the landowners in Texas. So there have been a few who have raised their hand and said, you know, there seems to be a disconnect here, folks. Why does a landowner? Why are the laws in Texas gray so that a landowner has to go to court to get definition on what is a common carrier? So we're hopeful that soon there may be some hearings in the state. There may be some of our elected officials who stand up and say, you know, we probably need to readdress this. Let's look at these laws.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, it's...
And how about the local press? How about the local press?
Yeah, the press has actually been very good. In fact, just today in Lamar County, there was a good story, not necessarily on how the Crawfords are buying the pipeline, but why the Crawfords are so attached to this land and what it means to us. I think that's what's important. Is this is about land that means something to us. So the press has been good, and there's been national press and local press. And, you know, there are all these analogies, the David and Goliath kind of, you know, analogies that are brought up. But
yeah, it's a wonderful write-up in the New York Times.
It was a great write-up. Saul did a wonderful story.
Yeah. I was wondering if it, because I've worked a couple of times on trying to preserve Native American land down here locally, and if we didn't have an archaeologist from the university, we had to hire somebody and catalog or document what was found on the land. In this case, it was a grove of trees planted as a thunderbird or as a bird, live oaks that were old enough to sustain that, you know, that we were on to Cuesta land, as they say. So I'm wondering if you've done any photographing or cataloging of the, I saw the pictures of like the arrowheads that you had. I can't remember where that picture was, but I found it online on an article with you. Is there any of that going on? That was what I was getting at before with this. Is there any kind of documentation being done on the archaeological side?
Well, yes. There's actually been two formal digs done, actually three. TransCanada had two in 2008, and in 2010, they had an archaeological team come and do shovel tests in this pasture in question. And based on what they found in the 2008 study, they did a subsequent study looking at a different area of the pasture to see if, you know, where there were cultural artifacts. We then commissioned our own study to, I think, you know, look at the area that was under the proposed easement. So there have actually been three different times. Two were incorporated into one study, but there have actually been three studies done here on archaeology, and those reports have been submitted as part of our court documents.
And can you share with us what the conclusions were? What they say? What they will tell the court?
Well, the documents show that there have been Caddo archaeological debris found in this pasture. There were pieces of ceramics. There were what they call lithic debris, which is pretty much shows that a stone was cleaved from another stone by a human, you know, a start to an arrowhead or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
We've also found bits of burned, I think it was burned wood, which would show that there was probably a fire. So a lot of the kind of the analysis that needs to be made is, you know, how far back. They say the Caddos were probably here 800 to 1,300 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, what's the perimeter of the site? Because, you know, it's like saying Houston is only the downtown buildings. Well, it's not. It's downtown,
right.
And it's the suburbs. So
mm-hmm.
you have an outer perimeter to these cultural sites. And where
mm-hmm.
does that outer perimeter extend to? And
mm-hmm.
how many artifacts must one find to say this is the boundary, this is where it ends? And there's
no.
artifacts all over this county. I mean, even the lands adjacent to us to the west and to the south, there have been artifacts found there as well. So there's cultural artifacts all over this land.
Yeah,
and,
they might be sitting on a cultural gold mine there.
Well, it's wonderful. I mean, this is, you know, to think that you're walking across land that Native Americans were here, and underneath
yeah.
your feet might be, you know, buried scrapers or arrowheads
yeah.
or tomahawks.
Yeah, exactly. Yep, that's very true. Is there a website where listeners can go to learn more about your particular case and about what you've been through? And is there a possible site for people to donate at for a legal fund or something like that?
Well, we have a site called standwithjulia.com. And
okay.
This is a website that tells a little bit about the story and gives people more information. I have not gone in recently to update. I think it may be reflective of the newest court dates. The 18th for the tree trial hearing and July the 30th for the jury trial. But
right.
you know, I'm not a Facebook person. I'm not a Twitter person. I don't have all of that. So that is really
right.
the go-to site for.
Sure.
For it, and you'll see me, I think, on a tractor. I think someone snapped a picture of me one beautiful morning on the tractor out there doing what I do, feeding the cows.
Standwithjulia.com?
Yes, sir, that's it.
Good.
I just put it into our chat room, and
good.
On it you can find the pertinent information to get what you need to know about the fight that the Crawford family is going through right now. And I'd like to read where you can go for other information or contact
yeah.
with Julia. There is the Crawford Defense Fund at gmail.com, and that's Crawford as C-R-A-W-F-O-R-D, Defense Fund, all together, lower capped, at gmail.com. And you can mail a check to the Crawford Family Defense Fund at P.O. Box 155, and that's in Sumner, Texas.
Sumner, I'm sorry, S-U-M-N-E-R,
Oh, I'm
Sumner.
Sorry, you're right.
That's okay, that's okay.
Like Fort Sumner.
Right.
Or that's Fort Sumter, yeah, okay.
S-U-M-N-E-R.
Right, okay.
Sumner, Texas, and that's 75486. Let me say that one more time. It's the Crawford Family Defense Fund, and it's P.O. Box 155, Sumner, S-U-M-N-E-R, Texas, 75486.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's all the information. There is a support page, Stand with Julia on Facebook, and gosh knows lots of folks get over there. And you have a couple of hundred fans on that page.
Great.
Isn't that amazing? It has just been so humbling to our family that people want to weigh in and support us. Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Right.
Well, right now we kind of all have to stand together, especially when it comes to preserving the land. And when you have a family or emotional attachment to a farm that works and produces for the larger community, I think it's important to bring it up and the awareness of it to folks. It's doggone hard to get the little guy fights into the public eye. You
uh-huh.
you actually, Julia, you've done a sterling job in that.
I've done it because people have been willing to help me along the way. I didn't necessarily know how to do it, but when you just speak from the heart and tell your story and it resonates
uh-huh.
and they tell someone else, that's how this has all come about.
And it snowballs. It gets bigger as it goes, and
it
that
does.
Can only help, no doubt about it.
What's been interesting is the New York Times article, you know, that gave us worldwide coverage.
Right.
And I began
Incredible.
To get emails from around. You could tell who opened their New York Times first. I was getting emails from Switzerland and soldiers in Germany and England and the East Coast and West Coast saying, you're fighting for us, or thank you for what you're doing, or, you know, give them heck, you know, or stronger. But it's, you know, we didn't go into this fight looking to bring any visibility to ourselves. It was just what was right to do for us. But
it's self-defense, is what it was.
And in the process,
you're helping a lot of other people.
Well, I hope so. And, you know, if in the end a win is that we shined a light on an issue that will be addressed down the road. You know, I'm a very competitive person. I played college sports. And, you know, winning is wanting to be ahead when the clock strikes zero, you know, when the time runs out the clock. But sometimes if you play your best game and gave it all you got, that has to be a win for yourself. So that's we're playing the game as best we can with every resource we can muster, and I can look at myself in the mirror, and so can my brother and my sister and my dad at the end of the day.
Yeah, right. And you can be very proud of what you've been doing, and we wish you every success. We hope this will snowball into something very big, and that you're hearing. You tell us a little bit about the hearing process. That's coming up on July 18th, you say?
July 18th will be the pretrial hearing here in Lamar County. I'm hopeful that it's an open forum that people can come, but it's not a jury trial. It's just a hearing. You know, both sides will have their time in front of the judge to kind of make our case. And then should we not prevail on any front there, then it will go to a jury trial to determine the value of that land. So we are... You know, I thought in college when you got ready for finals, when you were pulling all-nighters, you know, I'm learning in the real world you do the same thing in a legal battle. This is an
all-consuming
kind of process. Yeah.
Very true. Very good point. And, you know, the sad fact, and I'll repeat this, you alluded to it earlier, the sad fact is that there's absolutely no way that you can get this decision on condemnation overturned. This is only strictly... a determination to determine whether or not you'll be awarded, you know, a fair amount of cash. Well, there is really no fair amount of cash. But, I mean, you know, the tragedy, I guess, is what I'm trying to say, is that you can't get this this decision overturned.
Well, Jack, I don't know. I don't know if that's true or not.
I hope you're right.
We're hoping that we can find where the disconnects are. And we're hoping that we can find ways to say TransCanada isn't necessarily a common carrier because there are some things they haven't proven up. So I'm not.
Good point.
I'm not giving up yet.
Okay, great. That was what I evidently misunderstood you then. That's a very, very hopeful sign. That's great. I hope you can.
We do too, Jack.
No doubt. Yeah, that's that's something to be grateful for. Well, let's see what happens here. The 18th will tell us one thing. And then after that, what was the date after that, the trial?
July the 30th.
30th,
there's
okay.
12 days between the hearing and the trial.
Okay.
And if the hearing goes your way, there will be no trial, correct?
Right.
That's my understanding, because if we can basically say they shouldn't be able to take the land, then we don't have to assess a value to the land.
Yeah,
Julia,
you know,
this raises
a fairly dangerous precedent in my mind. If they're going to allow any old corporation, regardless of where it's based or founded in the world, to just pose eminent domain claims anywhere they want in our country, why even have a country anymore? It's not any company, Jack.
It's oil. It's
exactly
energy.
Exactly. But I mean, to extrapolate it further, if you know, whatever industry wants to do this, you know, this ought to be prevented. This is crazy. Why do you have borders? Why do you have countries? You know, this goes to the very root of nationalism, and I'm not a big nationalist, but, you know, it comes down to it. You have a country, you've got to defend it, and you've got to defend its territory and its inhabitants. And, you know, this is an assault on America, really, if you look at it.
Well,
and that's part of our position is when our land was condemned last year, it was a foreign company who appeared to be in it to make money,
exactly.
And they didn't even have the permits they needed at the time. And
exactly.
Our courts were allowing the condemnation because they figured they would eventually get the permits. Well, I can't go build a house until I have my permits in place.
Exactly.
It seems like things are kind of backwards.
Exactly.
Tells you a great deal of what is the state of leadership and what's legal and what isn't in this country, how mm-hmm. it's manipulated by who has the largest amount of money in the bank.
Right.
Really,
well,
quite frankly.
Justice, you know, the scales of justice are not necessarily equal. Money plays a big part in it.
Very true.
It does.
Very true.
But you should know, Julia, that there are people listening to the show right now, and one is a Canadian who's saying that, and I quote him, "There's so much to be said for your simply standing up for what's right."
Mm-hmm.
People appreciate that. It gives hope to other people. So, rawr, good job.
Way
Thank
to go,
you,
Stimson.
Canadian.
Yep. That's Stimson up in Winnipeg.
Thank
yes.
you, Stimson in Winnipeg.
Yeah, he's a very forward-looking, progressive Canadian. Very good man.
Is there any information, other vital information that you would like to get out, Julia, as far as any rallying, any kind of, other than sending checks to the defense fund, do you have any other ways that people can help you with this, with the fight that you've undertaken?
You know, I don't. I think people just, you know, if they'll follow it and, you know, tell one other person about the inequities here and what's going on. But
right.
really just send lots of positive vibes. I mean, we feel
yeah.
very supported by folks just knowing they're thinking about us. In a legal
mm-hmm.
battle, you have to be very careful on how you reach out and what you say.
Sure,
sure. But knowing that people are just kind of giving us a thumbs up
well, you're
emotionally.
You're putting forth an honest appeal. There's nothing convoluted about it in the least. It's a simple defense of your own rights, your own property rights, your own culture, all of these questions, and there's nothing that can be, turned against you for that reason. So we encourage you to keep fighting as you have been, and we're doing our little bit today to help spread the word a little bit, and hopefully from this we'll get a big Facebook response and Twitter and everything else, and people
oh,
will join the
wonderful.
Bandwagon, and that'd be great, you know.
And we appreciate you guys giving us a forum to tell the story, and I appreciate all your
Well, we want justice to prevail, and this would be unjust for TransCanada to come in and just bully their way onto your property and you know, potentially upset your farm and destroy its water table and everything else. We don't want to see that happen, and neither
well,
do you,
Well, we don't
of course.
Either, and that's why we're standing up, and we appreciate everybody standing up with us.
Right, exactly. Well, I'm
really?
On my hind legs right now, so good job.
On your soapbox, okay.
Yes, absolutely.
We actually have a caller. Julia, would you take a question from somebody if I answer the call?
Sure.
Okay, let's see who's online here. Area code 204, this is Gwen. You're open.
Hello, Gwen. It's Mike Stimson.
Hey, Mike, here's
Hi,
your
Mike.
Canadian supporter, Julia.
Hi, Mike, how are you?
Very good, thanks. You know, I've been listening, and I might have missed some, or I have missed some of the show because of my internet connection, but so you might have answered this question. You know, I'm wondering if you know, is eminent domain law significantly different in Texas than in other states? Is it harsher there or more rigid?
You know, I don't know. I really don't. I know that, you know, this pipeline crosses several states, and there was some, there have been, eminent domain is being fought along all the states that this crosses. I think Texas, because we're such an oil state, there's so many pipelines. You know, perhaps the eminent domain laws here are a little softer or grayer, but I don't know. All I know is they're too strong for me in Texas.
Mm-hmm.
I'm having to do this.
So you think they might be a little more friendly to the oil companies or the pipeline companies?
I think so. And, you know, and we're not saying that there aren't instances where, you know, there should be some allowances. This one just has too many head scratchers to it. What they're
mm-hmm.
transporting and how it's done, and the permitting process, and how disjointed it is. And I think, if nothing else, Mike, we're showing that there needs to perhaps be some new eyes put on the process through the governing body, or at least the first stop that pipelines have to go to, and that's the Texas Railroad Commission.
Okay. All right. Thank you, Julia.
Thanks, Mike.
Yeah, thanks, Mike, for your concern and for raising that question. That was a great one.
All right. Goodbye, y'all.
Yep, talk to you.
Goodbye, Mike.
Ooh, I like that y'all. Did you hear Mike say y'all? I
yeah.
like Mike.
He's a good guy.
And speaking of this and how big money seems to rule everything, Julia, we actually, in the last, like, 5-10 minutes of the show, do a little recap of some of the news this week, and I think something that is in alignment with just the fact of yourself going up against, my mother used to call it fighting City Hall, but I'll tell you what, she won a few times, so I know you can win at it.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. We're hoping.
But here in the United States, this week we had those Senate hearings with the I'm not sure I got this wonderful piece of audio here of Jamie Dimon, the CEO of Goldman Sachs, at the Senate hearings. But really, what it is the fellow who spoke before he sat down, and I want y'all to take a listen. This is a 2-minute tape.
Okay.
Jim Dimon's crook. He's taking $4 trillion in U.S. funds.
I'm over here, sir.
This guy should be going to prison. Him and 18 others. He needs to listen to Bernie Sanders. We need to listen to independent Senator Bernie Sanders. These guys sit on federal boards. They take trillions of dollars in U.S. taxpayer bailouts at near zero interest. This man is a crook and he needs to go to jail along with his 18 other cronies. He needs to break up the Federal Reserve. This is anti-job. These men are predators on the American taxpayer money. These guys are not the job creators, they're the job destroyers. We need to bring the money back to the people. We need to start getting money to help people stay in their homes. This man is a crook.
Now we're hearing people heckling Jamie Dimon. Let's listen.
Stop foreclosures now! Stop foreclosures now! Stop foreclosures now!
Guys, I just wanted to bring that up in this way, how it's reflective of it's this large, all-powerful money that seems to hold the sway in the end. But when the little guy stands up and says, hey, this is wrong, I mean, that was taken from a CNN piece of film that
mm-hmm.
was on the news last week when Mr. Dimon was in the Senate listening to, you know, being questioned by the Senate, well, if you can call it questioning.
Mm-hmm.
My point is that it's hopeful in this regard. It was actually on CNN, which, you
yeah.
know, pretty much controlled what their information is and what they put out to a large degree in favor of whatever large money wants.
Mm-hmm.
And yet the smaller the individual, the unique person who stands up to it, is suddenly getting a voice. And that's the parallel that I wanted to draw with Julia.
Yes.
Her fight.
Good. Well, the New York Times latched onto her story too, and that's a good sign. So you know, there's hope out there. There's no doubt about it, and we need to keep be relentless in our pursuit of in truth and justice, and let justice prevail.
We sure hope so.
Yes,
it's about banging the drum and speaking truth to power these days. I was
That's
telling
right.
you, Julia, when we first began to talk, you know, where they call us citizen journalism, but it's about, you know, that so much goes by the by and doesn't get spoken in national news. And that's what we're out here doing. As
uh-huh.
Jack said, I hope, and I think I know, we're bringing up awareness to a larger, you know, enlarging the group of people now that know about what's going on. in Texas with you and your family. And as Jack said, we certainly are on your side, want to offer you the platform and support for a positive outcome.
Well, thank you, Gwen.
Yes,
well,
any statement you wish to make, for your cause or to our listeners?
No, I think I've kind of spelled out the reason why we're standing up. This is just something that, you know, I came here as the farm manager to be charged with stewardship of this land,
mm-hmm.
and I think I'd be doing a disservice to my late grandfather if I didn't use every resource I had to protect it. And whether
Very
it's,
good.
You know, I think this is just one of those things you do, and 20 years from now we'll look back and say standing up was the right thing to do regardless of how it turns out.
Right. Well, good point, and we wish you every success in what's going forward here, and we hope you prevail big time.
Yeah,
thank you so much.
And, Julia, I hope you'll come back and let us know what's going on. We'll keep an eye out on this.
I will.
Yes.
Please invite me back, and I'll bring you up to speed.
Okay.
We certainly will.
And, Jack, that's our show this week. We're already down to it again.
Beautiful job, and it was great hearing from Julia and from Stimson and all the people in the chat room. We know you're behind us, and we hope the general public will become more aware of this. And, you know, maybe someday eminent domain won't play such a big role in corporate undertakings, you know. And maybe the real person on the street will be able to, or on the farm, as it were, will be able to enjoy better protection and better rights.
Well, you know, there is one thing that Julia says that has every bit of truth to it. Eminent domain is sometimes the right choice for a community,
right.
People, you know, but the way it's been abused by corporations is
mm-hmm.
really. So
yeah.
Fighting City Hall, rawr, move it on.
I'm all for it. Absolutely.
On that side. And, Julia, you've got our support, and you've got big cheers from New York City. Nicole's here also. So
thank you.
So that's our show this week. Thanks for listening in, everybody. I see Janelle there. I want to say hello to her.
God bless you, Julia.
Great, buddy.
Thank you. Thanks, Jack.
And, Julia, good luck, and I will keep my eye on it. I will give you a ring in July, see how it's going. And hope you'll come back and talk with us about it.
Thank you, Gwen. I'm sorry it took us so long to coordinate schedule, but today was a great day.
Great. Hey, well, we're happy about that.
Happy Father's Day out in Texas, too.
To everybody. Yep, that's right. Everybody is a father.
Everywhere. Absolutely. Tomorrow night, be sure to tune in for Wise Woman Media with Anita Stewart. And I guess that's it, except for... Now you can go on over and listen to Rick Spezak at Progressive News Network right here on Blog Talk Radio. Thank you, everybody. Thanks, Jack. Thanks, Julia.
Good. Talk to you next week.
Thanks.
Yep. Goodbye
Bye-bye.
Now.
Bye-bye.